welcome back to another episode of the Body Positive Mum podcast with me, as always, your host, Adele Johnston. Ladies, get ready for a super hot episode with Dr. Zoe Hodson, who is a general practitioner and menopause specialist. We are diving deep into the world of testosterone. So buckle up and listen in. All right, Zoe, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yet again, absolutely amazing having some time with you and your amazing brain. So we're just going to jump straight into this one because I've got a feeling we are going to have a lot to talk about in the area of testosterone as a female hormone. So we're just going to kick off the conversation because you've been doing a lot of work, as you always do, in the menopause space, but in particularly looking at testosterone and the replacement options that we have as females. So do you want to maybe just share with me and the listeners what you've been up to, what you've been doing?
Yeah, so this sort of, I mean, I suppose this journey started way, way back, and it echoes a lot of the problems. There are so many problems with menopause care, full stop, and testosterone takes this to another level. So many years ago, a lady came to me and said, I would like testosterone. And I actually felt really uncomfortable during the consultation. And I just thought, why are you putting me in this position? I don't know anything about it. You're asking me to do something that is way out of my comfort zone without any support. I couldn't find any guidelines. And I actually felt, and I think this is a common reaction with, you feel slightly cornered, and then that can very often turn to frustration. You just want, you want that patient out of the room, really, because you've got all these uncomfortable feelings that you don't know what to do with, and you're being asked to do something that you have never, ever been taught about. So I've, as I've said before, in my 10 years of training, I had 2 hours training on menopause. Testosterone was never mentioned. It was never mentioned at medical school. It was never, ever mentioned as a female hormone. And so I started reading around it, and for her, because I thought, well, yes, I would like to be able to prescribe this. You brought me some literature in. But again, there wasn't, didn't seem to be any support for me to do that. Didn't know where to turn to access it, because we'd seen women going through seeing gynecologists, and again, no mention of testosterone. And we know that the menopause clinics are quite thin on the ground in the NHS at the moment. So I thought it must have to be handled with kid gloves. It must be really difficult to monitor. It must be so complicated that it can only be done in these very specialist hospital clinics. And it sort of got left there for a while. And then I started this training and then started prescribing testosterone, because I had been then taught how to prescribe testosterone. And it was just such an eye-opener, because again, the big focus on the guidelines has always been about libido, loss of sex drive. It's really important, and we'll come on to that. But the things that we see that it improves are things like your cognition. So it helps with things like word finding, with memory impairment. It helps with energy. It helps with strength. It helps with mood. And it really does, and this is why, I mean, I'm quite open about it. I would say it's my favourite hormone out of all of the ones that I prescribe. Because you see these women of all ages who have just lost that sense of self and their confidence. And we know there's a huge issue about women leaving work due to menopausal symptoms. And women just say, I'm just checking and checking and checking. And these things that I could do at the drop of a hat, I'm having to focus and concentrate, and it's exhausting. And I feel exhausted, and I just don't know sort of where to go from here. And then when you prescribe it, it's actually really straightforward. There is some monitoring, but there are guidelines available online. And so I've now got to the point where I'm starting testosterone in the clinic. And I, as you know, I work in a private clinic. And that was partly, like many others of us at the clinic, there just isn't funding for us to work in an NHS service. It isn't funded in general practice. There are very few secondary care clinics. And so I'm really keen to get women up and running and then back to their GP, because they shouldn't be having to pay ongoing for private care. It's not covered by insurance companies. And so I'm writing to the GPs to say, is there any chance that you can take over this testosterone prescription? Here are the guidelines that are intended for primary care, so general practice. I've clarified with Mr. Nick Panay, who wrote them, and they're on the British Menopause Society, that they were intended for general practice. And then the GPs will go to their local formulary and nothing.
Right.
So you're asking them to step out of their comfort zone without any backup from their local area prescribing formulary. And as you say, we started looking into this about a week ago. I asked women, because there are so many formularies, it would just take me till kingdom come to go through them all. Started just asking women, could they look on their local formulary and just see what the position is on testosterone? And it absolutely appalling. I think we've got maximum five areas in the whole of the UK that permit women to have testosterone. You've had a look in your local area. It's really difficult to dig down into it, and testosterone will be mentioned, but invariably not in relation to women's health.
Yeah, do you know, that it's a very valid point you've made there, because, and you know, I'm quite open, all the ladies on this podcast know that, but I myself might have a requirement to replace testosterone. So I'm in this journey right now where I'm just waiting on the second lot of bloods coming back, because my overall testosterone, when we checked it, was pretty much non-existent, not just low, but pretty much non-existent. So from that point of the matter, I think there's a lot of symptoms that I've been experiencing personally that I would never have known could be as a result of the low testosterone in my hormonal makeup.
And that's the thing, we actually produce more testosterone than estrogen.
It's crazy, right? Nobody really knows.
And then it does this steady decline. So we're not asking for anything new, it's ours.
Completely.
And this is a, I mean, when I saw my GP, when I'd, and again, it's sort of a personal journey, because it was the first time I'd ever had to have time off work. I just couldn't, my brain wasn't working, didn't have any energy, it affected my mood. And when I was up and running on it, which I accessed privately, to my GP to chat about it, this was sort of pre-lockdown, and his first words were, well, of course you feel better, it's a steroid hormone.
My God, trigger point.
I know, and I said, well, no, because it's replacing a deficiency. I don't have any, and it's just getting me back to normal levels. It's not adding it in. Asking to be sort of superwoman, I'm just asking for what should be mine.
Yeah, so straight away it tells you there's a gap there within the understanding and the knowledge, right? There's still that kind of gender bias that exists around this hormone, you know, testosterone equals men, and it's not, it's far from it. We as women need it. It's not just a nice to have. Like you've said, you know, it's one of our very core.
I think it's, again, it's so unexplored, this. I mean, again, you can see why women get misdiagnosed with fibromyalgia, because it just gives you this overwhelming fatigue. And then if you've got the other symptoms that can go along with low estrogen, so the joint pains has a big impact on your mood, you just don't have the energy or strength to do anything.
Which is debilitating, right? It's that part of, you know, I think I'd done a post on this today, actually, and had said that it almost comes down to it being a kind of crisis of care for some women, where it's not just a, oh, I'm feeling a bit tired. It's actually the difference between that woman being able to function both physically and cognitively, but and lead her life. And that woman, you know, we naturally think that menopause is an old woman's thing, but actually, it's midlife for us now. We're surviving so much longer than women in even Victorian times, when they would die not long after their menopause. That's not the case.
I think this
now.
Is, I mean, again, we've spoken about this before. There are so many undiagnosed younger women out there. We know it's particularly important for them. So women who have early menopause, premature ovarian insufficiency, surgical menopause. So when they have surgery to remove for other reasons, which puts them into menopause. Women who've undergone cancer treatments in younger age, which puts them into menopause. And again, what we often see is going back to getting levels. Now, again, the GP's not having any education on what testosterone can do and what normal levels are. often, so I spoke to somebody who was distraught because she had a lot of symptoms. Her GP had very kindly done some bloods for her. Mm-hmm. And in my view, they were incredibly low, but mm-hmm. they still came back in the normal range.
Right.
The GPs had any education about this. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, you couldn't find, it's mm-hmm. just such mm-hmm. a mess.
Yeah. So where, in your opinion then, if we were to look at this, because this is just a query that's come to my mind as well, just in the last probably couple of days, actually, preparing for this episode as well, was thinking about, well, where does it sit though? Where does the kind of, not the buck stop, but where does the responsibility sit within the medical professional field? Because I know that there's that kind of gap then in between GP knowledge, but is it really for a GP to have to be the one that specialises in this? Should it, you know, in your opinion, should it not be that it sits more within, I don't know, like gynae or somewhere that's a bit more female health?
I don't. I mean, 20 years ago when I started, things like sort of chronic renal disease, things mm-hmm. like diabetes, a lot of it was done in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I actually moved to general practice. So general practice, the GPs are used to dealing with complex, really complex health. And this isn't.
No, it's not.
I don't see any reason why. Yeah. It's very straightforward guidelines. It's a very safe treatment. There's lots of data about that. So that's the practical thing, if we could apply some common sense to this, is there really is no reason why GPs couldn't manage this. Mm-hmm. However, big however, so many things to address with this. The reason GPs are comfortable managing things like asthma and diabetes and heart disease and renal disease is because they've been taught over and over again. So they're taught at undergraduate level, they're taught several times in their GP training, mm-hmm. and then every GP has to fulfill their regular appraisal and prove ongoing learning. Mm-hmm. So pick up those topics, they've been introduced to them at a fairly early stage and they're comfortable with them, and then they become much more experienced with them. And general practice is really stressed at the moment. We know that, and particularly with the COVID situation. So part of me feels bad for asking them to do another thing mm-hmm. on top of this. But at the same time, I don't think this needs to be done in a specialist clinic. Mm. It really isn't rocket science. Mm-hmm. We've got, as I say, I mean, we're introducing when we're doing training and looking at the symptom checker and just starting to introduce the idea that these symptoms can be due to female hormone deficiency.
Yeah.
That is fed in at regular intervals through. So again, I'm doing some training in Manchester in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. And the course organizer said, well, what stage should we introduce training about menopause? And it's all every stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's affecting 51% of the population.
Yeah. And it will affect them. It's not that it might.
Yes.
It's not like diabetes or, you know, yeah, any type.
So it shouldn't be limited to an afternoon in your final year of general practice training, because mm-hmm. you've missed so many opportunities by then. Mm-hmm. And it's an area that you is good to become familiar with. And when you become familiar with it, you will see how things change, and you can recognise the hormone patterns, and you can recognise which hormone fits in which box, in a way.
Yeah,
as to. This is, I mean, it's a major problem that the Royal Colleges aren't recognising the training. At the moment, I mean, the curriculum for general practice is vast, as you can imagine, but it's just sort of lumped under women's health.
Yeah.
And that means that many trainers who don't have any knowledge about it can quite easily skirt past it, because there are so many other things that can be covered in women's health. Mm. So that's why Diane Dunsibrink's campaign to make it mandatory is so important.
Yeah.
And for the clinicians as well.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. An awful, awful position to be put in, seeing lots and lots of women and never having been taught.
Yeah.
It's really unfair for them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it kind of, you know, from any of the listeners who are listening to this right now thinking, you know, I wonder if this is me. I wonder if this, you know, some of those symptoms, I'm thinking, oh, that could be me. It's more than thinking, well, what's the next steps for them? How do they start to initiate any type of is it or isn't it, so that I can get help? Is that making that initial...
And this is such a postcode lottery at the moment. So we need women knowing, educating themselves about this, knowing that it is a female hormone.
Yeah.
We need the GP, if a woman asks about it, to be familiar with it and to know the ranges to test for and whether that's a significant deficiency, a treatable one. I mean, you don't actually have to do blood tests. You can just do it with symptoms. But I think, again, if we're introducing this into the land of general practice, then they're probably going to feel more comfortable with blood tests to validate this to begin with. And another postcode lottery. So 6 miles away from here, the GPs can't even organise or can't even ask for the blood tests that are required because the lab won't do them.
Right. That's interesting.
In Manchester, the lab will do them.
So then those ladies that are in that postcode cycle, that circle then, that is out with the testing, they would ultimately then have to, I presume now, think about going private to get those tests done.
Well, you can. They'd have to go to a menopause clinic, and there are a list of the NHS ones on the British Menopause Society website as well. So again, you're looking at having to access a menopause clinic and then have tests done and then start the therapy, and then what happens then? These are straightforward cases. You've got them up and running on testosterone, so that should not stay in secondary care because it's clogging up an already underfunded, under-resourced menopause clinic.
Yeah.
But they go back to the GP. The GP turns to the formulary to see whether or not they are advised that they can continue this treatment, and the formulary doesn't even mention it. So what? So they stay under hospital care.
It's crazy, right?
Single blood test and prescription. That's it's ridiculous.
And it's like you say, it's that postcode lottery of, it's not UK based, this approach.
No.
It's actually some areas are a little bit more advanced and further forward in this care zone than others within the same country. But I think, you know, from what I've been researching and looking at, the UK is so far behind other countries such as the US in this type of care. So when it comes to the prescription and the readily available testosterone replacement, this is where you've mentioned before, some majority of GPs, they're outside their comfort zone as soon as a woman asks, I would like to have testosterone replacement. It's kind of that, oh, okay, because it's still not seen there as that.
No, and I think you have to recognise that if you approach a GP and say, I understand that you might not have been taught about this. And then that's where you can download the leaflets from the menopausedoctor.co.uk website. There's, they're under resources, and there's a leaflet about testosterone. So that can be forwarded to your GP, and you could say, would you mind reading about this? I really do feel it could be underpinning my symptoms. But, and again, what we need is for the GP to then have the backup, a consistent formulary. So we looked, and I think, as I said, I think there are about five areas in the whole of the UK that acknowledge this and have it on their formulary. So the formulary is a list of medications that the GPs are advised to stick to with their prescribing. So again, if you're prescribing outside the formulary, it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, that one formulary, and it's all available online, had posted that this is considered a, what was it, a low-value intervention.
Yes. And it's like, well, who, one, how have they come to that conclusion? And two, who has written this to be able to then put that out there? It's not a low-value intervention. It's a necessity. It's an essential for replacing these.
I mean, even if we just look at, so the main guidelines, the indication with the NICE guidelines are for loss of libido, so sex drive, when HRT is optimised. Even if we just take that, who is to say that that is a low-value intervention?
Yeah, agreed. It's not.
It's outrageous.
Erectile dysfunction is not dealt with in the same way, and I suppose this is getting into that land of been a bit controversial, but if a man rocks up to the doctor saying, I'm having really bad issues and it's affecting my self-esteem and actually I'm not able to make love to my wife or have sex with my partner or whatever, and it's affecting my relationship.
And they turned around and said it's a low-value intervention.
Yeah. Madness. Absolutely madness. But, do you know, I think part of it excites me because I'm like, there's so much that can be done in this space because it literally is so fragmented right now that there is there's a lot that can be done. Probably what I would refer to as the low-hanging fruit, where the pressure can be put on into that medical space to say, this isn't good enough anymore. We're in the year 2021, and as females, we will not stand for this any longer. But part of it is then, but how do we get to there? How do we, you know, what do we need to do to raise that noise?
Well, this is the, I mean, I think it's not going to go. It's very unlikely to go from nothing to GPs being able to prescribe it. We'll have to look at the way that the NHS works. So this is why I've asked women to start. Most of the areas will have what's called a traffic light system on the formulary. So they will have drugs marked red, which are not prescribed in general practice, drugs marked green, absolutely fine. And what we're looking at for the first stage, and I know it's going to frustrate women, but it's looking at what is achievable step by step. And I think amber is the most realistic first stage, and that would mean that it could be continued by a GP if started in a specialist clinic. I think if we go in and at the first stage and say we want GPs prescribing, it's just going to be an absolute no and we won't have achieved anything.
Yeah, agreed.
So get it to amber. And again, if women don't have an accessible menopause clinic, an NHS one in their area, then they'd be asking the clinical commission group why.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, if I can't access this through a specialist clinic, why isn't there access to a specialist clinic? It's that, again, is in the NICE guidelines. So I think that's what we've been asking women to do. And there's a template email on menopausesupport.co.uk, which a lovely lady wrote. And it just covers all the guidelines that are available. And again, it's sort of, in the same way as fertility treatment is very much a postcode lottery. It's better now, but it was very much a postcode lottery. This is, and we're just asking, why is that the case? Why can women in Derbyshire access testosterone and women in Fife can't access testosterone?
Yeah, I know, and it is crazy. It's like you see, I mean, even looking at the kind of NHS support, menopause support clinics that are available, there wasn't any when I had a look that were nearby to Fife, where I'm from. So in order to get to the nearest one, it was either Perth, which is 40 minutes north of where I am, or Glasgow, which is 60 minutes drive to the west of where I am. And actually, I haven't done this myself to try and make any physical appointments with them, but I've heard that the wait time to be seen or to be spoken, you know, arranging a kind of consult with them is taking a very long time, and that's to be expected if there's not a lot of clinics available locally. You know, I think that, I think it's one of these things where, like I say, it does excite me that we've got this big gap. I know that sounds crazy, but it means that there's a lot that can be done, like you say, step by step in a very controlled and knowledgeable manner. But equally, it's like, well, how have we got to the year 2021? And this is still a massive gap in knowledge and understanding. And you and I both kind of exactly have the same thought process on that. All of us women, regardless of whether this is a passion or a profession or it's our own bodies, we need to know how we're feeling and how it's working. So by doing a bit of reading, by absorbing information on, well, what is testosterone? It is a female hormone. It's not just a male hormone. It's made in the ovaries. So it's not just a, you know, something that's kind of there that we're kind of like, oh, when it's gone, we don't need it. It's actually a really core, crucial hormone to what we need for our body to function effectively. So, yeah, I think it's just about, you know what, my one ask from anybody listening to this now would be, ask questions, absorb information, read literature, grab some books, and if you're unsure of what ones, then ask Zoe and I what we've liked to read that have helped us to grow our understanding of things. I mean, not so much Zoe, because she's a GP. You've got that grounded knowledge. But just don't sit in the dark is probably my one big ask from this today.
Yeah, and I think it is. It's not going to be an easy journey, this, by any means. But it's, I sort of think we have to start somewhere, don't we? We can't, again, not the next generation are not going to be going through these battles.
No, Christ, no, absolutely not. And I have to think of that as, that's my daughters. You know, they're coming up for 11. They're just about to go through that early period of starting their menstrual cycle and going through their kind of young adulthood. I actually would, you know, be extremely upset, angry inside if we get to a point where they are in their 30s and 40s and this is still a conversation.
This hasn't changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think this is it's a big driver, isn't it? It's this can't keep happening.
Completely not. And I think that's, you know, something that we'd kind of said before I hit record, is that it still seems to be that kind of gender bias within even the kind of medical professional industry as well, where, you know, the research that's even been done in this area is predominantly just, it's done through men. There's not enough female research that's being conducted that we can say, look, here's the hard evidence.
Yeah, and I think, again, I mean, this is where social media has just sort of come into its own. Even with the, you know, the thing with the requesting the UK version of the estrogel.
Yes, yes.
And I think it's giving women, because there's so much, I mean, right across menopause, its symptoms are being dismissed. No, you're too young. No, your periods. No, your blood tests are normal. And I think it's giving women the confidence to cut through that and say, no, you will listen to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that even with the ladies that I'm supporting just now, a lot of them were denied some of the core blood checks that we wanted to have done for them. Now, we, again, just caveating that to say you don't need to have blood tests to prove, I mean, in fact, you can't really have a blood test to prove whether it's menopausal or not, because of the fluctuations in our hormones so often. You know, the symptoms, like we've said, are enough.
Yes.
But even just generally trying to get some medical care and intervention for prescriptions, the GPs are reluctant to go just based on the symptoms.
Yes.
So I've found that with a lot of my ladies, the GPs have ran just bog standard blood works. FSH
and then you get the reply, your
healthy, everything's fine, and it's like, well, no.
Yeah.
Or we wouldn't be here, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So a lot of the time it's arming ourselves with how to effectively request their support for, and I think this is a phrase that has stuck with me from one of our chats earlier, even last year, was around, well, sometimes we just need to ask for their support in a trial of treatment. And actually, it's not that we're asking them to put us on a stack of HRT care for us forever. Initially, it's let's just look at this across maybe even a 6 to 12 week period so that we can see. Let's just see how it happens.
Yes, and you haven't lost anything, have you? And you've had all the other tests under the sun and not, and you're still not reaching any. I mean, that's the, again, for a GP, for someone to keep turning up to the clinic.
Mm.
Same symptoms, and you just think, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And speaking to the GP group the other week, one of them had done the Confidence in Menopause course.
Amazing.
She was just saying it's you can get women to feel well.
Mm-hmm.
And what could be more rewarding than that?
Definitely.
Get them back to functioning again, enjoying their lives.
Yeah.
Having intimacy again.
Yes. You know, all of these things.
I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Of,
as you've said, how come women are suddenly not allowed a sex drive?
That's it. And it's not even just the sex drive. You know, something that, again, you know, full transparency, I do not get embarrassed talking about these things, but something that I noticed, and I don't know if it's something I've noticed for quite a while, so it's probably been there for a long time, is that I can find it really difficult to climax or orgasm during having sexual intercourse or whatever with my husband, it can be really difficult sometimes, and it gets really frustrating because you think, why? Like, what is going on? And that's actually another symptom and sign of those hormone deficiencies, low testosterone, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it's within that kind of gift of our own to understand our body and know, you know what, there's something not quite right. Don't know what it is, but I need support to figure it out. So please, GP, support me through this and let's see where we can go with a trial of treatment. So it's, that would be the end goal, right? That we've got enough built into the curriculum so that GPs are kind of going in armed, knowing that potentially most of the females that they will see that are in their 40s and plus are going to be approaching them with an array of symptoms.
Of different symptoms.
And rather than just, you know, and this is no disrespect to GPs at all, but rather than just treat the kind of array of different symptoms with antidepressants or creams, potions, you know, pills.
Yeah.
It's more a, you're ticking a lot of boxes here. I wonder, could it be this?
Yes.
Let's just check that and then we'll work together to kind of iron it out. That's the real ask.
Yeah, and this
right?
is where it sort of comes back to everyone taking a part, isn't it? Because we need to educate the younger generation that, for example, 5% of women will become menopausal between 40 and 45. We know that 1 in 100 under 40. So again, it's a big collective effort. But I think, as I say, I don't think we can wait for the Royal Colleges to pick this up any longer. Nothing has happened for such a long time that we have to drive it.
Yeah, agreed. So on that note then, what can we do as a collective, as females and as males? I do have some male listeners to this podcast. So what can we do as people, as human beings, to support ourselves, our daughters, our mums, the females in our lives, to move this forward?
It's recognising, isn't it, the symptoms, and this is the balance up is brilliant because you've got your symptom checker, and then it's being able to spot. And again, for men are pretty much surrounded by women.
Mm.
It impacts them as well in the workplace, at home.
Yeah.
It's as much their issue to take up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's recognizing this, supporting, because you can feel very vulnerable. And you, again, if you're even taking the first step to approach a healthcare professional, can feel very vulnerable.
Yeah.
So when GP surgeries open up again, even having someone going in with you, if you are, particularly if you're having things like word finding and just feeling rotten, just have someone sitting with you saying, well, these are the symptoms I've noticed that she is experiencing.
Yeah.
We've read around this and we would really like to explore if it is HRT that you wanted to explore, or explore treatments that could help with this. So, again, it's global with this. We need everyone to be wearing their menopause glasses and everyone to gradually. And I think a lot, the younger GPs, I mean, a lot of the old ones, but especially the younger GPs are... They're really keen to embrace this, and again, but they haven't known where to turn to before now. So again, a lot of them are engaging with the 14 Fish program to give them that confidence to manage this properly.
Yeah.
And another area, it needs to be funded in general practice, because it's not so things like asthma reviews, diabetic reviews are all funded. This isn't funded, and yet it could be one of the most cost effective treatments. Well, it would be.
Yeah, not could. It absolutely would
it's
be.
It's not could. It would be.
And when you think about the impacts it has across the workplace, you know, these are things that even some employers are being really forthcoming and on the front foot with menopause and putting a lot of care and support into the workplace as part of their employee benefit scheme, whereas others, you know, that they probably haven't even thought about the impact that menopause is having on their female and male workplace. Because it's not just issue.
Even just looking at the NHS. A huge, I don't know the exact percentage, but a huge percentage of their workforce are menopausal women. It's just not cost effective, really, to not support them.
Yes, agreed. Oh, it is a vastly exciting but very unknown time right now, right? On where we're going with this.
Yes, but we'll still keep chipping away, I think.
That's it. And I am 110% behind... you and Newson Health and what you're doing. So here, beck and call, anything that's needed.
Yes, yes. And I think this is the first start, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of just asking why are we having to ask this in 2021?
Yeah, exactly. It's madness.
Where is it on your formulary? When are you going to discuss it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If they don't reply, then that's going to be cut back on again, and that's when we start looking at MPs and things. But I think, as I say, there's enough of us to not let this drop now.
Yes, agreed. And it doesn't just have to be someone in the medical space that can write these letters. So again,
the
kind of call to action, if we can say it that way and make it quite formal, on the back of this episode would be that each and every one of you, you know, forget about all of the social media stuff. This is not about getting the likes or the shares. This is about getting the information off of the menopause. Was it on the menopause charity website?
Yes, it's on the it's going to be on, I think, the Menopause Doctor website, hopefully in the next week or so. And it's already on the menopausesupport.co.uk website. So there's just a template email with some structure on. And as I say, if women can personalise it with their own journeys, just to give each area an idea of the frustrations that women are feeling.
Yeah.
So whether it's access to menopause clinics, whether it's being told at your GP surgery that you can't have HRT, the individual frustrations, I think, would also be really useful for each area to start to get an idea of what is happening. Because if we don't speak up about it, again, they don't know.
True. Absolutely true. And it might not be that they're sat there, you know, I call it ostriches, where heads are in the sand and they're just kind of, you know, living life as an ostrich. It might not even be as, you know, as blatant at that as that. It might just be that there has been that level of ignorance around it that they've just not known.
So I think it is, it's time to get vocal.
Divide and conquer, ladies, divide and conquer. So that is our ask on the back of today. But as always, I will keep everything in the show notes, clickable links, so that people have access to all of the websites that we've mentioned today. And the app that Zoe had mentioned as well is one that I massively feel as a user myself, but also have all of my ladies download, is called the Balance app. So do make sure that you go and download that if you haven't already, so that you can track your own symptoms and stay up to date with the brilliant community that's in there, all of the resources. And like Zoe said, there is a testosterone leaflet available as well. So never be stuck, never be lost. You have got an array of information at your fingertips. You maybe just don't know it right now. So just ask myself or Zoe or anybody at all in the menopause space, and we can point you to where this information sits.
Yes.
Brilliant. Marvellous. Well, Zoe, as always, thank you so, so much for your time today talking about this. It is a topic that I literally could speak to you about forever. But it's hopefully the next time that we do something on testosterone, it will be bringing the listeners an update on the progress that has been made in this space to getting the deserving care that we need as females in this world.
Yes, and recognising it's our hormone.
Yes, it is our hormone, absolutely. Thank you so much. Yes. Ladies, I hope you have enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed chatting with Zoe. It's an area and a topic that I think is going to be ongoing for a long time. But my hope and my aspirations with this episode is that we just raise a little bit more awareness around testosterone as a female hormone. It is our hormone. It's not just a male hormone. So I think if you can take one thing away from this episode, would be just that. Now, we do have an ask, as we said at the end of the episode. So if you can support us to get this out there, then I would absolutely appreciate it so vastly. If you're unsure on how to do that, then you can reach out to myself or to Zoe. I will pop our details in the show notes, as well as the details to the website that you can go to and obtain the email template. It's as simple as just adding your spin on it and sending it off within your local council area for your NHS support. So yes, ladies, get behind this. Let's make this hormone one of ours that we can take back and have available to us as part of our menopause support care.